Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Monday, May 23rd, 2016. I'm Dan Shearer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who is enjoying week number two of a wonderful vacation. He and Anne arrived in London yesterday, one of my favorite cities, and they are thoroughly enjoying themselves. Check out his photos on his Facebook page. Just type in Bill Buckmaster and you'll find him. I am one of several people taking over his duties while he's away, and we are glad to do that for him. Joining me on the other side of the glass today is Ray Allen. Thanks for being here, Ray. The Buckmaster Show is heard live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 p.m., right here on KVOI, 10:30 a.m., and we're live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. You can also find archives of past shows at buckmastershow.com. The show always starts the week talking to our experts during the Monday political face-off. Today we're welcoming Vince Robago and John Munger. After the break at 12:30, we'll be talking with Michelle Phillips, the executive director of the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation, and asking the question, what do the really good nonprofits do right? If you want to join the discussion, you can call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. That is 790-2040. It's time now for our Monday political face-off. We welcome John Munger, Tucson attorney and former head of the Arizona Board of Regents and former GOP candidate for governor, and Vince Robago, a Democrat Party activist, former candidate for state attorney general. He's also currently the head of the Hispanic Caucus of the Democratic Party for Pima County. The Monday political face-off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializes in custom-framed mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services and systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com, and of course on Facebook. John and Vince, welcome. I hope you guys had a restful weekend.
Sure did. Thanks for having us here.
Great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks both. Well, the presidential race, if possible, just got even crazier. Mark Cuban, he is the owner of the Dallas Mavericks and a reality show host, doesn't that sound familiar, says he's open to being vice president for either Trump or Clinton. Vince, this guy seems awfully impressed with himself. What is what's going on?
You know, I think it's just someone who's trying to get a little attention for himself. He certainly is a very, very successful businessman, and the reality show that he's on is the Shark Tank, where inventors and entrepreneurs present ideas to try to get these very wealthy individuals and businessmen to sort of become partners. But it does kind of show you sort of we're entering into sort of a crazy sort of a situation with respect to, you know, someone like Donald Trump, who is and has been in the business world and has made a brand for himself as a reality celebrity type person. It just kind of it's one of those sort of shake your head moments, I think, in this election.
John, I feel like I'm back in junior high. The most popular candidate wins, not necessarily the best. What do you think of the Mark Cuban thing?
Well, I think he's better than Jan Brewer.
Leave it alone, Vince. Leave it alone.
I'm just smiling over here. I just have to shake my head.
I think that it's ridiculous, but so would Jan Brewer be.
Yeah, well, we've had about a year of ridiculous now, but we'll see. Let's move on. Vince, the GOP has its candidate. How big a problem is it that Bernie Sanders is still kind of this fly buzzing around Hillary Clinton's head?
You know, I don't think it's a problem at all. I mean, the reality is that primaries sharpen candidates. They focus the attention of the electorate on the race. The media likes to talk about what's happening when there is a race that is going on. And so there, you know, it doesn't hurt, I don't think, either candidate. The question, though, really is going to be, you know, pretty quickly here. I think Hillary Clinton's not very far off from clinching the numbers. But on the other hand, you know, it has been impressive, the action and traction that Bernie Sanders has obtained in presenting his message to the Democratic primary voters. And he's been winning a number of states. It's one of these deals where it's probably too little too late, but John and I have both been in contested primaries before. Obviously, this is a different situation. It's a very, very different situation when you're talking about this sort of level. But I don't think it really hurts. You'll see in any race, as you saw when President Clinton, when Hillary Clinton was running against President Barack Obama, similar calls were made. Oh, well, you should drop out. He's clinched it, and you're certainly seeing that. And you'll have a certain segment of the Democratic primary voter that no matter what will say, hey, time to stop, get behind the leader at this point.
Well, but, isn't he costing her a lot of money?
You know, I haven't looked at it. I'm sure it is. But it's money that's getting her name out there either way in those particular states through the television advertising and so forth. So back to my earlier point that whenever there's a race, so to speak, a horse race, and there's media attention and resources being spent on advertising to get a candidate's name out there and for to cement that with voters, it does not hurt the candidate.
Okay, John, what about Donald Trump? Does he have some advantage because he now is unopposed?
Well, I think he does. I mean, it's very interesting. The Democrats have been saying for a year now how divided the Republican Party is. The Republican Party, frankly, is coming together very nicely. Even Lindsey Graham has now told his supporters to support Donald Trump. And it's very interesting that now that the Democrats are in trouble, they don't want to talk about it and it's not significant and all of that. I think that Bernie Sanders presents a real problem for Hillary. Her only solution to the problem is to nominate him as vice presidential candidate, in my opinion. If she doesn't do that, then his voters are going to feel like the primary was stolen from them by the rigged superdelegates nomination process in the Democratic Party, which the Republican Party doesn't have, and that the political insiders have in the Democratic Party have stolen the election from Hillary. Her only way to get around that is to nominate Bernie Sanders as a vice presidential candidate, and I don't know if he would accept that, and I don't know how well they can work together. Who knows? They could probably mend fences. I think that's the only way to solve the problem. He says he's going to go through the entire primary. He's going to challenge the rules at the convention, Democratic convention. For their superdelegates, his position and his voters' position is that the convention is rigged, and it is. And so we'll have to see what happens. But if the Bernie Sanders voters are not given something significant, it will be a real problem for Hillary Clinton. She'll lose some percentage of those who either won't vote or might even vote for Trump.
Vince, would you agree with that? Bernie Sanders folks need something.
No, you know, I don't. I wouldn't agree with that because the reality is those people that are supporting him to be the president. They're not supporting him because they just want to see him have a role in an administration. They may be happy if that ultimately happens, but you know, this is the race that's still ongoing. It's not yet resolved the way our system works, state by state, and you get all the delegates, and then you have the system that the Democrats do have, which is different, involving the superdelegates. But no, so I would not agree with that. The other thing too, I wouldn't agree that this gives Donald Trump any measurable advantage. The reality is, I mean, he mentioned what Lindsey Graham, but the bigger issue, and we've discussed this on prior shows, there are numerous folks, very conservative folks in the Republican Party that have essentially joined the Never Trump bandwagon, ranging from, you know, former living presidents, both Bushes, you know, Mitt Romney. We have many, not to mention those that are just voices in the conservative movement that have come out and basically said this man is not fit to be president. So while John may accurately point to the fact that there's still a race going on the Democratic side, there is tremendous unrest and division on the Republican side, and rightly so with respect to Donald Trump, whether or not he possesses anything near the capability or the judgment or the temperament to be the leader of the free world.
And John, isn't it a little disconcerting that the Republicans, a lot of them just don't like Donald Trump? Does that mean they're not going to vote for him later? Or do you think that anybody but Trump bandwagon, the wheels are going to come off here pretty quick?
Well, the polls are showing that the Never Trump movement is dying out, frankly. And there's only a few hardcore people left, the Bushes, who I'm not surprised because Donald Trump worked over Jeb Bush. He deserved to be worked over. Mitt Romney, I don't know where the heck he gets off preaching to Donald Trump. Mitt Romney lost. Nobody cares what Mitt Romney thinks, frankly, within the Republican Party. I don't know if anybody that I talk to a lot of Republicans. I don't know anybody anywhere that cares what Mitt Romney thinks. And so I think the Republican Party is coming together nicely. It's showing up that, you know, he's even or ahead of her in the polls. And I think, but that really isn't the issue of the conversation here. The issue of the conversation is, what's the effect of Bernie Sanders in this race? And Bernie Sanders is going to be a thorn in Hillary's side. It's going to make her spend money. She can't focus on Donald Trump. She's got to stay to the left. She can't tack back to the right. She's got problems, and it's going to happen all the way through July and August with Bernie in the campaign.
Okay, very good. It's about 12:15 on the Buckmaster Show with John Munger and Vince Robigo. We will be right back in a few minutes to continue the Monday Political Face-Off.
The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster with some exciting news. You could win a $1,000 or a $500 travel voucher to one of 16 nonstop destinations from Tucson International Airport in the Travel Smart with TUS contest. Register for free through Tucson International Airport's Facebook or Twitter pages, or go to the website travelsmarttus.com. Good luck. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and, of course, on Facebook. I'm Dan Shearer, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, and I'm joined by Vince Robago and John Munger. And, Vince, we're going to give you one more shot at the presidential race. You wanted to respond to something that John said right before we went to break.
I wanted to just talk about the fact, the point that these polls purportedly show Trump in the lead and saying that therefore there's a problem. Let me just go back to 2008, and in those when it was Barack Obama was running, and John McCain actually took the lead twice when you looked at those national polls. Once was right after the Republican convention. And the other time was when he clinched the nomination. And so, but the rest of the time it was downhill, and certainly he did not win that race. And so any bumps that you can see from Trump being sort of the sole person in the field there on the Republican side really is meaningless, because there is no head-to-head battle, Democrat versus Republican running at this time. It's a skewed view no matter how you look at it, until there is just one versus the other. So I wouldn't put any real stock in that in terms of what polls are at this particular snapshot in time.
Okay, let's move on to a state issue. Prop 123 narrowly passed last week. We had over 1 million votes cast, and it passed by about 20,000. The president of the Arizona Education Association said it's clear that voters want an ongoing commitment to public education from the state. John, who at the legislature could or should take the lead on making sure that happens, that we have the proper funding for education and it's being spent in the right places?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with your premises there, Dan. The United States has more funding per student than any other country in the world, by far. And we are not competitive with most of the industrialized educational systems. What does that prove? It proves that money isn't the major factor. We have lots of money in our school districts. Only 54% of the dollars are getting into the classroom, according to our state auditing department, which is 10 or 12% below what the national average is. The school districts typically are funded also by their own tax districts. School districts are tax districts. Now, the school districts are so unappealing to their own voters that the school districts cannot get overrides to raise the taxes themselves. So what do? They blame the Republican legislature because they want to substitute the state for their own school district tax bases, because they can't get the funding from the individual tax bases. Well, if the individual voters in the individual districts don't have confidence in their school systems, why should the state give them more money? I'm not sure that makes any sense. The state was always supposed to be simply a subsidizer for equality across the board in schools, not a major fundraising support for the school districts. I think if the education lobby in this state wants to have more money, they need to get it, start looking from their taxpayers in their school districts. They'll complain because they can't get it from their school districts. Well, if the school districts and the voters in those school districts won't support a tax increase, why the heck should the legislature?
But I think one of the problems, John, is that the school districts are going back to the taxpayers, because the school facilities board is not financing construction of new schools. And so now local communities, we see this down in Sahuarita, where we are building the schools from residents' tax dollars through bonding. So they already are. So then when the override comes up, the taxpayers are a little tapped and they're turning them down. And then back to your original thought, rather than comparing the United States to the world, why don't we compare Arizona to the United States? And we still fall within our own country pretty close to the bottom for school funding. Doesn't that bother you?
Not really. Not when the school districts are putting only 54% of their dollars into the classroom. That means 46% of the dollars are not getting into the classroom. That's absurd. And it's 10 or 12% below the national average. Why should we put more money into the individual school districts? You're saying, well, the school districts are tapped. Well, what makes you think the voters and the taxpayers throughout the state aren't, quote, tapped?
Okay, Vince, isn't a question of priorities then, I guess?
Well, the reality is it is a question of priorities. And we are dead last when you compare, just about dead last when you compare us to other states. So when you are comparing apples to apples, and you look at the woefully underpaid teaching staff in this state that are literally fleeing. It's a travesty when our state does not want to fund it so you can pay teachers adequately. When a teacher could make more money selling cell phones down at a cell phone store like Verizon or Sprint, one of these other stores, and they can make more money in a salesperson's job than they can educating our investment for the future. We have a big problem. And there are many other issues with respect to how the budgets work in terms of the funding and how infrastructure is accounted for in those various formulas and other things that we have to provide that are supposedly considered not classroom spending, but they're necessary. So it's a very skewed view. The reality is over the last 10 years, more or less, that the Arizona legislature, headed by the GOP, has systematically cut and underfunded our education system. They even then broke the law, violated the state constitution, violated Prop 301, which is what led to that lawsuit, which led to essentially like a debt, almost like deadbeat dads that owed over $1 billion. And so to say that, we should look at the world and it's not all money. The reality is money does make a difference. And other businesses that want to come to this state, they look at how woefully underfunded and how little we really want to invest in our children here that the legislature does. And they don't want to send their top businesses here. They don't want to relocate for the most part when it comes to those issues.
Okay, we're going to go to the Buckmaster Show live line. And first, we're going to take a call from Matthew. Matthew, you want to weigh in on education?
Yeah, I would challenge Mr. Munger in his premise that even Republicans don't recognize that the state is woefully underfunded in education. If I recall, it was six Republicans who stood up to Speaker Biggs and said no, and to the governor, we need more money for education. We need money to save JTED. We need money. I think it was $30 to $50 million that they insisted be added to the budget before the end. So I disagree. I believe Republicans in the state of Arizona even understand the reality that money, it does take money to fund schools, and that Arizona is woefully underfunded. Thank you.
Okay, thank you,
well,
Matthew.
Well, I want to respond to that. Sure. JTED, I agree with her, and I'm glad that the Republican Party did stand up and fight for JTED, and they did that. But that's not principally what we're talking about. The individual school districts that put 54% of their dollars into education, just by getting up to the national average of 65% or so, could give their employees a 10% raise right off the top. All they have to do is put 65% of their dollars into the classroom instead of 54%. That's all they have to do. And if I get back to the point, the main funding source for schools has always been the local school district tax base. And the purpose of the state was only to equalize the spending so that poor districts would have as much to spend on schools as the rich districts. The state is doing that. We just put $323 million into the system by virtue of Proposition 123. And what are the school lobby saying? We want more money.
Okay.
I mean, give me a break.
Let's head on back to the live line. We've got Dan on the line from Tucson. Dan, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to question what one of the fellows said about the so many teachers leaving because of poor pay, but my grandchildren are in private school, and I've talked to almost all those teachers in their school, and about 80 or 90% of them have left our public schools and took a severe pay cut in order to go to a private school because they've got a little discipline.
That is right. My wife was a teacher in Chicago in union schools. She absolutely hated it. They got rid of, they operated on a seniority basis. They took the most senior teachers, no matter how bad they were, they kept them on. They riffed the bright young teachers. It was a disaster, and that's what we have right now. That's what you get in these union schools. Private schools are operating less salaries. They have a better result. And it just goes to show, money is not the problem. There is plenty of money in our system.
The reality is that there is no such thing as just the school lobby and this disparaging of this situation as union schools. So the reality is we have parents and we have teachers and we have a public education system that is designed to be the great equalizer of our public system. And when you do not invest in that, you can have whatever other system and more power to the private system for whatever they do, but that's not the system we have when you cannot abandon what we have designed to be the great equalizer for our children.
Okay, that's going to have to be the final word. We're running late here. I want to thank Vince Ravago and John Munger for joining us on today's Monday Political Face-Off. Good conversation as always. We appreciate it. Right after our break, we'll be joined by Michelle Phillips of the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We bring you national stories ignored by the mainstream media. Sources include the Washington Times News Service, Personal Liberty Digest, the National Center for Policy Analysis, the Washington Free Beacon, and the Heartland Institute. It is national news coverage from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Every year, eager travelers journey to Europe to experience the Yuletide season at its very best. With the glittering backdrop of winter white hilltops and extravagantly decorated cities, get swept up in the enchantment that's in the air. Let's not forget the most magical part of all, Europe's famous Christmas markets, renowned for their festive atmosphere, great food and drink, and handcrafted gifts. Experience the magic of the holidays aboard an Amma Waterways river cruise. Call Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Christmas market cruise and save up to 40%. Bon Voyage Travel, 797-1110.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I am Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. This portion of the show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson, coming up over the Memorial Day weekend. It's the 21st Silver City Blues and Bikes Festival. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, like Bear Mountain Lodge and Casitas de Gila Guest Lodge, visit southwestnewmexico.org. I am joined in studio by Michelle Phillips. She is with the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation. Great to have you.
Thank you. Hello, everybody.
And
hope
I
you're all doing well.
And I look forward, when Bill allows me to have the microphone, to highlight some of the organizations and people we have down in Green Valley and Saurita and farther south. And you're one that I've wanted to get on the show for a while because you do something unique, extraordinarily helpful, and I bet a lot of people haven't heard about it. So we're going to dive into it. But first, tell us a little bit about the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation.
No, Dan, I think it's because I said yes that I would do it.
And I'm glad you're here.
The Community Foundation in Green Valley has been in the Green Valley area for 46 years. We change and enrich lives through guidance, education, and financial support to the communities we support. Every community foundation has a jurisdiction. And as you know, Dan, the jurisdiction is Saurita, Green Valley, Amado, Aravaca, Tubac, and Tumacacori. So we're concerned with over 70 nonprofits in our area. So that is Health and Human Services, Animal Rescue, Youth Programs, Arts, Education, and the Environment. The Community Foundation is a philanthropic organization, so we're here for donors. If they have a vision and they'd like to make a difference in their community, we set up funds. We also have an endowment that is managed, and that is how we grant. We also do some fundraising, but try not to be in direct competition with the organizations that we support.
Yeah, and when I first arrived in Green Valley, I thought, oh, you're just another group that gives away money. And for a long while, I thought that, and you do give away money, and it's important, and a lot of people rely on it, but there's so much more. And you and I have talked a lot about nonprofits, what makes them successful, what tanks them. We've had some real frank conversations about what's going on in their own community, and because it rises and falls on its volunteers and nonprofits. Let's start with the success part. What is the best thing a nonprofit can do for itself?
Okay. Well, there's actually four things that they can do. And the Community Foundation follows this. We based our nonprofit Learning Institute on it. And it's called The Four Pillars of Successful Nonprofits. And it's by Mark Davey and Associates. Mark Davey actually happens to be our president right now for the board of the Community Foundation. The first thing is the nonprofit living its mission? Because if you're not living your mission, what are you doing? That's big, because sometimes you go off in several different directions and you get pulled because of the needs of the community. There's a need that comes up. We've got to fulfill this need. But you really need to stay clear with what your mission is and what your vision is. Number two, you've got to run it like a business. Nonprofits make up a large percentage of the dollars in the United States, billions in fact, and they provide much needed services. That we see the organizations that just have the wonderful heart and they're doing it because of the passion, but there's some lacking organizational skills there and a good business sense. And so that is one key factor, and we hammer that over and over in our trainings.
And that really speaks to the idea of getting the right people on the board. And it's right. is a It's a kind of a heady thing to be asked to serve on the board of a nonprofit, and you don't want to turn them down. And maybe it's something that's your passion, but are you always the right person for it? I don't think enough people ask that very honest question.
Right. Well, you know, the third thing would be recruiting and obtaining effective leadership. If you don't have the right people on the board that can function, you know, as a team and also tackle the larger issues together, then you're going to have just a slew of problems. So I would say the board, you know, whoever the nominating committee is, needs to come up with, you know, what is the makeup that we need to have on each individual nonprofit board. We struggle with that with the Community Foundation because of our jurisdiction. I'd like to have Erivaca, someone from Erivaca, on our board. That hasn't occurred yet. And also it's a time commitment, too. We do have a lot of retirees, but we are also looking for business people, you know, that can devote the time. And you've got to say to yourself, you know, am I the right person, but can I devote the time necessary, you know, to be an effective leader for this organization? And then the fourth thing is communicating to donors and the public in general of what you do. Because more and more, the donor, or at least we experience, is not just looking for the stories of how you help, but they're wanting you to quantify and qualify their donation. You know, what have you achieved? So it's not just the story. So you need to be able to, you know, be communicating effectively what your mission is, what you're about, and be ready to respond with, you know, what the needs are and if someone is willing to help.
Back to your first point, living its mission. When you go in and you're basically assessing a group and you look at their mission, what often is the biggest problem with the mission? Is it too broad? Is it that its own board members don't know what it is? Is it that they're duplicating efforts? What's the problem?
Well, I would say that they haven't looked at it in a while.
That's right.
The board can't communicate what the mission is. I mean, I think, you know, every 5 years, you know, 10 years, you know, you need to be looking at your mission statement. And also it might be too broad. I mean, we had to do that. We changed after 46 years, and we're community foundations are taking a look at the totality of the area. So we're looking at, you know, what services are lacking, and that influences how we support and grant each year. So yes, too broad a vision, or excuse me, mission. Well, vision too. Too broad of a mission, and the board of directors can't communicate the mission.
So when you are asked to be on a board, what's the first thing that should go through somebody's mind?
Well, this is part of the human development that I feel every board member needs to go through, and that is you need to leave yourself at the door, and you need to become part of a team player, because if it's your agenda, that is going to backfire. If you feel like you need to run this and a board makes a decision and you don't like the decision, you become a lone ranger on the board and there things get roadblocked. So you've got to have that, and I've got to bring this in here, Dan. You got to have worked on yourself to some degree, spiritually speaking. You've got to have that element of service beyond self. I like to recruit leaders that are moral leaders, moral leadership, that are trying to serve the highest in their community. We have a cornucopia of people in Green Valley, and they've had high-powered positions, and they're used to being in charge. But when you step on a board of a nonprofit, it's a different animal altogether. And you really have to humble yourself. You also need to find your role. you know, you're going to have strengths, you're going to have weaknesses, and sometimes people on the board are going to, you know, need to back off and let others step up. That's hard for me when I want a board, you know, member to step in and they don't, or they do step in and it's like, oh, wait, I'm used to doing this myself all right. the time.
Well, and how do you teach people, particularly those who have been in, you know, a business field or something for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, how do you teach them the skills of diplomacy and compromise when they have not really had to exercise much of that?
Well, every nonprofit needs to have board training. So, and you need to find out exactly where each board member is. So that's the responsibility for the ED to have a community, you know. I would say it takes 2 years on our board to get up to speed.
Wow. Wow.
That's a long time.
That is.
Just because the nature of community foundations are different. We don't deliver a service or a program. So we are, it's a paradox, and sometimes people don't understand, well, what do we do? Why am I serving on this board? And so I would say you have to start with board training and the intricacies. And if you're moving forward with certain programs, you need to be able to bring the board up to speed
very quickly. And after the break, we're going to be talking about the Nonprofit Learning Institute, which you guys operate, and it's very interesting. I am Dan Scheer. I'm sitting here with Michelle Phillips of the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman on behalf of Five Star Termite and Pest Control. You know, I've got five kids and four of them are daughters.
Daddy, Daddy, there's a spider in my room.
Oh boy, did I get smart. I took care of the spider, but the smartest thing I ever did was call Five Star Termite and Pest Control. Guess what? No more bugs in a Lehman household. They do a great job. They're economical and environmentally friendly.
This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across Pima County. More than 730 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. Thanks to our partners in the public for collaboration, participation, and support of the RTA plan. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to our communities, the RTA truly is making a difference. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm a passionate traveler visiting more than 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With five airlines flying nonstop to 16 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News, Sawadita Sun, sitting in for a vacationing Bill Buckmaster. This portion of the show is presented by Green Things, the place for all things green in Tucson. Green Things has all your plants, pottery, and gardening supplies on a beautiful 13-acre location at 3384 East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, also just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Check out their website, greenthingsaz.com. And we are here with Michelle Phillips. She's the executive director of the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation. And before we went on break, we mentioned the Nonprofit Learning Institute. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I wanted to also comment on the political show you had before. Remember?
Absolutely.
I think it's important for people to be aware that, you know, during a political season, nonprofits don't necessarily fare too well. Because, well, the market is, it's kind of stabilizing, but people are holding back because they don't know what the outcome is going to be. And nonprofits really suffer during this time.
That's interesting.
So I think it's an important thing to mention.
And I don't think anybody would even be thinking about how you would be impacted, particularly, again, during a presidential run and a campaign season like we've had this year, which is unlike any I can ever recall. So you're saying that a sense of insecurity, in a sense, causes people to hold back from giving.
Correct.
And being involved.
Correct. We are seeing those that have given, they're giving half of what they normally would give.
Okay.
During this time.
Just because of the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting. Do you see it kick up after the election generally? Or
we should after inauguration. So,
okay.
Looking for a good spring campaign.
Never too early to start in the nonprofit world. Okay. So, the NPLI, the Nonprofit Learning Institute, doing great things. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Well, we started it, a colleague of mine, Bob Phillips, no relation. He was executive director for the Santa Cruz Community Foundation, as well as ED for Border Community Alliance. This dovetails off of some of the other groups in Tucson. Particularly, we've used Alexander and Carrillo. Also, there's been some training from ASU Lodestar, that philanthropic group in Phoenix. But we, you know, trainings are expensive, and we knew we needed to have a better educated NPO, nonprofit organization, group, support group. So we've broken it down into a certification program. There's four modules, and we're just through our second module of training. And we feel like the organizations that are showing the support know that they really need it. Some of the others aren't quite on the bandwagon yet, and it only seems when there's an issue do they come to me,
right,
rather than moving forward with the training. But that's just one aspect of the Nonprofit Learning Institute. The other is we recently ended almost a year-long Aravaca project. There are seven nonprofits for 700 people in Aravaca. That's quite a lot, and we've been doing the same type of granting to these organizations. And basically, things need to change, whether it's more regional grant making, coming together. We went in to do some strategic planning. We really wanted to see them come together with one community focus. I think the seeds are planted there, but it's going to take a little bit of time. It's the no more the linear thinking, Dan, where it's kind of one nonprofit against another nonprofit. We really have to come together if we're going to solve and nurture our community. So it's not their donations against our donations or our fundraising event against their fundraising event. We need to see more collaboration.
Even in a small place like Aravaca, do you see that some of the nonprofits, and you say there are seven down there that you've been working with, are overlapping in the services? And quite frankly, they need to either narrow the focus or one of them needs to join with the other.
I think you could see some more collaboration. But it would need, the whole structure of Aravaca would need to change in a community sense. And I think that's a little bit of what they're looking at. We've really enjoyed being in Aravaca, and the community is very rich indeed. I don't mean wealth-wise, but I mean just in flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, it is a beautiful spot down there. It's a little remote, you know, mm-hmm. another 20 miles down the road from Amado. But there are some people in that community, and I was really surprised the more time I spend there, who really care about what's going on and the future of it. And unfortunately, it also is wrestling with stigma and a reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's part of the big issue down there. But I'm glad to learn that there are a lot of nonprofits down there trying to turn things around.
We're forced, and pulled in different ways. Funding either, you know, freezes up or you have to reach out, and we're all trying to reach out together. And when you bring resources to each other and you're not in competition, then the mindset begins to change and you become more open to the possibilities. And my vision is, it's always in our areas to have a bunch of nonprofits housed in the same location.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a one-stop shop. And I think we just got done with a community conversation for that.
Exactly. Now, can anybody get help from the Nonprofit Learning Institute? You say that you have an area that you oversee. And so who can benefit from what you're doing there, and what are the options for those who are outside that area?
Well, we're extending it down to Nogales and even cross-border because we have a partnership with FASAC across the border. We really don't want to see that there's any division there, and that resources down the line can also come our way too. If you call my office and you need assistance, and you're out of our jurisdiction, I can certainly refer you anywhere. But I'm up for a good conversation, whatever the issue might be.
Some free advice, and she's worth it, trust me.
So. Well, and I want to quickly mention, and we didn't, the next thing of our Nonprofit Learning Institute is we have executive roundtables, and consistently EDs of organizations, CEOs of organizations, and volunteer heads are coming together to meet and to solve problems. And I think you should sit in on one because it's a good hash out session. You know, you're developing your friends, colleagues, support system, where it's nice to know that this ED is faced with the same issue as another one is. We're there for each other. It's a very strong support system. And that is one of the things that I'm really proud of right now, is that it's building. We've got 9 consistently. We have some from Tucson that come down. It's fun to watch and to be, you know, just to kind of leave your hat at the door, but yet get help when you really truly need it.
And I'll tell you, people who are passionate about a community will, in that setting, be really frank with each other and brutally honest, because they really want to address the issues and move forward. What is your office number, in case anybody wants to get a hold of you?
It's area code 520-625-4556.
Okay, very good. I'm going to put you on the spot. We got about a minute left. All right. Tell us about some of your favorite groups in Green Valley and why they work.
Wow. Wow, that's a tough one because I don't want to do favoritism here.
Yeah, and you got 1 minute.
Okay, well, Valley Assistance Services work really, really closely with Chris King. The food bank does a tremendous job. I also like the Animal League of Green Valley, also Equine Voices. Friends of Madera Canyon are wonderful. You know, I love them all. I click with every one of them, and they're just such awesome people to work with to provide this service.
And I'm familiar with all the groups you mentioned, and what they do have in common is they do have strong leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
they do.
Yeah, and these are people who are not afraid to go out, and when they see someone who they think would fit well on the board, and they've identified a hole in the board, they'll go ask them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the problem then in Green Valley is that sometimes people get spread a little too thin and then they just burn out.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, we are going to wind it up with Michelle Phillips. She's with the Greater Green Valley Community Foundation. I want to thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Dan.
And
it's been a pleasure. It's
definitely
been a pleasure to reach all these folks out there.
Great, and we will definitely have you back. I'll be back in the seat on Friday with Sarita Mayor Dwayne Bloomberg and, of course, our journalist roundtable. Until then, enjoy the other guest hosts who are going to be sitting in for Bill the rest of the week, and you have yourself a terrific afternoon.